The Gospel according to Luke. Some Sadducees, those who say there is no resurrection, came to Jesus and asked him a question. Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies, leaving him a wife but no children, the man shall marry the widow and raise up the children for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first married and died childless. Then the second. And the third married her. And so in the same way, all seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. In the resurrection, therefore, whose wife will the woman be? For the seven had married her. Jesus said to them, those who belong to this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy of a place in that age and in the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. Indeed, they cannot die anymore, because they are like angels and are children of God, being children of the resurrection. And the fact that the dead are raised, Moses himself showed in the story about the bush, where he speaks of the Lord as the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Now he is God, not of the dead, but of the living, for to him all of them are alive. This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. Would suggest there is no such thing as a dumb question, but sometimes I certainly wonder if there aren't questionable questions. We can learn a lot when we don't know something just by asking. In the age of Google, it's pretty easy. We're not left wondering all that long about the answers to the questions that we have. So I did a quick search of the top questions that were asked of Google in 2018, and what you find when you do that is a really strange mix. So the first answer, the top response, with just over 5 million searches in under a month, was the question, when are the NBA playoffs? That was it. That's what people really wanted to know. The next one was, where is my refund? Followed by, what's my IP address? Is water wet? Which I thought was just a weird question that somebody would Google. And then, can dogs eat apples? Which I didn't know the answer to, so I actually Googled it, and according to PetMD, yes, they can. The last one that I saw on the list of top 10 was the question, does he like me? Which just about broke my heart. The list goes on. Scientists and theologians and authors throughout time have always inspired us, though, to ask our questions. So Albert Einstein once said, to raise new possibilities, to regard old problems from a new angle, requires creative imagination and marks real advance in science. Stephen Hawking once said, I'm just a child who has never grown up. I still keep asking these how and why questions, and occasionally I find the answer. Margaret Atwood, author, notices the answers that you get from literature depend on the questions that you pose. And Pope Francis says that if one has the answers to all of the questions, that is proof that God is not with him. The great leaders of the people of God, like Moses, have always left room for doubt. You must leave room for the Lord and not for our certainties. We must be humble, he says. The truth is, Jesus has a really funny relationship with questions. Martin Copenhaver is a pastor and a theologian who examines this Jesus' relationship with questions, and he quickly realizes that Jesus is not an answer man at all, but rather he's more like the great questioner. So in the Gospels, Jesus asks more questions than he answers. To be precise, Jesus asks 307 questions. He's asked 183, of which he only directly answers 3, which I find a little annoying. Asking questions was central to Jesus' life and teachings. It was a strategy in his theology to think about what God might be doing or saying in God's word and among the people. In fact, for every question that Jesus directly answers, which is 3, he asks literally almost 100 questions. But today, the question that is posed to Jesus in the gospel is probably more of a questionable question, because what the Sadducees are trying to do, I have a frog in my throat today, is trap Jesus. They're trying to trap him because it's a question about the resurrection, which is a mystery that the Sadducees have already considered and decided already that they have rejected. So unlike the Pharisees, the Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection from the dead. Kind of like the many different denominational expressions that we have in Christianity today, there are many different expressions of Judaism in the day of Jesus. The Sadducees asserted that there wasn't a doctrine of the resurrection of the dead or belief in angels if you looked at the Torah, which was the most authoritative writing at the time. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. No resurrection, no angels. But it says in the gospel today that some Sadducees, not all, some of them asked Jesus a question about a woman who has been through a whole lot. A woman who has become a serial widow, and about whose wife, or rather whose possession, will she be in the resurrection. So thick with patriarchy, which I won't address to say today, but just needed to point out, their concern is not for the hypothetical possession of the woman in question, who they're using as a pawn for their debate. And their concern is not about Jesus' view on levirate marriage, which was an institution put in place in the book of Deuteronomy that ensured a widow would be cared for upon the death of her spouse by marrying a brother. Their concern is how Jesus is going to approach the question. Where is he going to bob and weave until he gets to the true heart of the matter of the law of the Torah? And I think they hope that Jesus is going to show in his answer that somehow he is not trustworthy or knowledgeable, or perhaps even look like a fool. And of course, well, Jesus is a whole better human than I am, because he doesn't get defensive and he doesn't acknowledge the personal attack, which is what this is. Instead, he addresses both the context and the true heart of the matter and uses that moment to teach about the actual resurrection and about the love and mercy of God. Jesus does this by differentiating between this age and that age in the resurrection. And between this age and that age, he acknowledges that our relationships will only change and deepen as we, in the resurrection, become like angels, which the Sadducees don't even believe in. But Jesus is saying something that I think helps us even today, which is that heaven and earth are not the same. This life and the life to come are different. And thanks be to God for that. So one of the questions that haunts me is when people look me in the eye and ask the question, why? Why, Pastor Jen, did God allow this to happen? Why didn't God step in and do something to intervene? Why is there so much suffering in the world? Sometimes in those moments, I confess that it seems of little comfort to speak the helpless truth, the reality that we don't know an answer to the question, why? We don't know an answer to the question, what was God thinking? But to be the one to stand there and say that when life has done its worst sometimes feels empty, or even worse, damaging. And even if we were to know the answer to the question why, there are times when I question if that knowledge would help things make things better or not. But what I have noticed is there is a difference between those who focus on this age and that age. And what I have noticed is that when we focus on this age, oftentimes we focus on pain. And we might miss where God is drawing us near, breathing life into that age, breath into chaos, companionship into this age of wilderness, or even making a miracle in this age of the messiness. And ultimately, this is where Jesus leads those questioning Sadducees who do not believe in the resurrection. What do you think of when you picture the resurrection? What I envision is light and lightness. I think of freedom, and I think of singing. In the Bible, there are quite a few images for what the age to come will be like. But I would imagine that most people dream of and hope for a great reunion or reconciliation. I find comfort in the words that are shared in the book of Revelation, where John of Patmos writes of a vision of a time when death will be no more, and mourning and crying and pain will be no more, and all will be gathered around the throne of God, and there will be a tree with leaves for the healing of the nations. So how healing it is to think in this age about what Jesus says in the 38th verse of our gospel for today. That God is God of the living in this age and that age. That God is a God of newness and forgiveness. That in God, in the resurrection, we are liberated, set free from anything that holds us back. Suffering ends in that age. Systems that dehumanize people end. Violence ends. Sexism ends. Racism and classism and any other ism will no longer be, because there will be an end to this age. Hallelujah. So I pose a question for all of you to ponder today. How do you, as a follower of Jesus, become a living answer to the question of the resurrection that so many have in this age? Henry Nouwen, writer and theologian, asks, did I offer peace today? Did I bring a smile to someone's face? Did I say a word of healing? Did I let go of my anger and resentment? Did I forgive? Did I love? These are the real questions. I must trust the little bit of love that I sow now will bear many fruits here and in the world and in the life to come. One of the questions directly answered by Jesus came from the thief on the cross, who knew that he deserved punishment, but also knew that Jesus could and would, by his power and through death, bring him into life in the kingdom. There's not a question mark in my Bible in this passage, but I like to think that it reads that way. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom? The thief asks this question, and Jesus assures him, today you will be with me in paradise. For all of those questions that are lingering that you don't have an answer to, what you have today is Jesus, who is God's great answer to the question for why we can't on our own find healing or wholeness. That in his dying, although a mystery and a great big question, we are able to find a peace that Job also seemed to find, even in spite of his suffering. And so I will leave you with these words of Job, that he speaks not with questioning, but with certainty. I know that my Redeemer lives, and that at last he will stand upon the earth. And after my skin has been thus destroyed, then in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see on my side. Thanks be to God.